This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. One of the big themes that has defined our era is the erosion of the American middle class. For a long, long time, a big part of the middle class dream was home ownership. But now, for a growing segment of Americans, home ownership is only just that, a dream.
And that's particularly true for younger Americans. According to the Federal Reserve, the rate of young people getting their first mortgage plunged by 50% in the last decade. Even though home prices are down and interest rates are at historic lows, younger adults aren't taking or can't take the bait.
According to a recent article in the Boston Globe, while overall home ownership increased in Massachusetts between 2005 and 2010, for younger adults aged 25 to 34, it dropped, and by 20%.
So listeners, we're asking you why young home ownership in Massachusetts is on the decline. Have you put off owning a home or abandoned the idea completely? If so, tell us why. What would change your mind? Is renting a better deal than owning, or is it the only deal available? Give us a call at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also join the conversation at radioboston.org or on Twitter and Facebook at Radio Boston. And joining us here in the studio is Carl Case. He's a retired Wellesley College economist and co-founder of the Case-Shiller Index. And Carl Case, welcome to Radio Boston. Great to have you.
Great to be here.
Also with us, Michael Goodman, associate professor and chair of the Department of Public Policy at UMass Dartmouth. He joins us from New England Public Radio in Amherst. And Michael Goodman, good to have you. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
So let me start with you, Carl Case, if I could. What does your data about the housing market say about this? Why are younger buyers choosing not to buy right now?
Well, I mean, there are a number of reasons. One is they don't have jobs. I mean, the unemployment rate is very high, and if you don't have a job, you're not going to be buying, and you're not going to be living where you want to live ultimately. And the second thing is that people now know there's risk in the housing market. And the risk manifests itself in a huge drop of in the value of single family homes and condominiums, cooperatives, and so forth. And you can see that every day. And we had coming into this period a period of rising home prices without end for 30 years. Nationally, house prices have never fallen. So it's a combination of the people now know there's risk, and there's now a problem with the job market.
Hmm. Professor Michael Goodman, let me get you in on this. Aside from those financial considerations, are there other social factors at play here?
Well, I think if you take a look at the way unemployment is playing itself out by age and educational attainment here in Massachusetts and across the country, there's another dimension to the story. I would agree entirely with Professor Case. Those that are younger are having a more difficult time in the labor market, particularly those that are less well-educated. And so even though Massachusetts is home to the highest proportion of well-educated people with a college degree or better than the rest of the country, about two-thirds of our population has less than a college degree. And for those less well-educated residents, particularly those folks who are younger, don't have experience, didn't already have a job, and frankly, even though prices have dropped over the last I guess it's now 6 or 7 years in Massachusetts, the prices are still in a very real sense out of reach for many people who don't earn a solid income, let alone have the credit that's now required to qualify for one of these low interest rate mortgages.
So the price of entry is still high. I was looking at statistics from the Massachusetts Association of Realtors. The median selling price for a single family home in April was $282,450. Condominium median selling price in April $273,000. So still a relatively high price of entry, right?
And even higher, I think, in those areas of the state that are close to where the job opportunities are, particularly within the immediate Greater Boston area, in communities that are the most attractive, many of which have done a pretty good job of holding their value.
I see. Carl Case.
But if people were able to get credit and they were it's remarkable how affordable housing has become if you think about it, right? If you look at the price of housing, it's down about 25-30% in a lot of places. The statewide, it's only down about 18%. But you've got very low interest rates if you qualify for a loan. You've got a heavily subsidized investment. If I told you I would give you an investment that yielded about 6% tax-free, was guaranteed to give you a flow of dividends from it over a period of extended period of time, almost indefinitely, with no tax on capital gain, it's a house. You think of a house, the yield on it that you get over time is you live in it rent-free. Mm. And so if you count that, that's not taxed. You take property taxes are deductible. Interest, if you want to leverage, is deductible. It's still very cheap to buy a house. But it doesn't overcome the fact that if a lot of people don't qualify because of choices they made in the housing market in the past, or they don't qualify because they don't have a job or they don't have a steady source of income. And once you don't qualify, the option is closed. It's not really a choice. It's a constraint.
Isn't, though, one of the big issues here, and Michael Goodman, let me ask you this. I mean, one of the big issues for a young buyer is they don't have a long record of credit. They need a pretty hefty down payment. And, you know, just taking that median condominium price, coming up with 10 or even 20% of that, that's $50,000. That's not the kind of money that's sloshing around in the average young person's pocket.
That's right, and it's not necessarily a surplus in their family or friends as it was. And we're in a post no money down mortgage environment. I think another thing that's worth bearing in mind is these economic challenges that are facing our young people, and frankly more than just our young people, are having real demographic impacts that I think illustrate part of the problem here. If you take a look at household formation in the U.S. and the rate at which people are forced to or making the choice to live at home or not start their own households, I think the most recent data suggests that just under 1 in 5 males between 25 and 34 is living with one of their parents or guardians, which is a significant change because I think new household formations are part of what drives the housing market. And certainly if you can't afford to maintain your own household, it's hard to imagine that you're going to be able to purchase a new home.
We're talking about why young home ownership in Massachusetts and across the country, frankly, is on the decline. We're joined by Carl Case. He's a Wellesley College economist, retired co-founder of the Case-Shiller Index, and Professor Michael Goodman, associate professor and chair of the Department of Public Policy at UMass Dartmouth. You can join the conversation, 800-423-8255. And we've got some listeners lined up that would like to get in on this conversation. Let me read a couple of things, though, first. Elaine Almquist tweets, "The only housing I can see as affordable is pretty far away from Boston. That is far away from my job. House equals buy a car." I guess by that, Michael, she's talking about she's got a thing. Well, you were mentioning how the houses are less affordable the closer you are to jobs. So there's a tweet that makes that point. And Heather Borgensen writes on Facebook, "I would never buy a house due to my six-figure student loans. Houses are too much commitment, too little return, in my opinion." Carl Case, that's a theme that sort of comes up again and again, is the very high student loans level that people are stuck with.
Yeah, the credit market for first-time home buyers is pretty lousy. I mean, they do have student loans. They don't have jobs in the same ratios they used to in the past. But it's still the fact that some people are buying. Some of my own students who graduated in the last couple of years actually can buy a place today. Many of them get help from grandma and grandpa,
mm-hmm.
because the baby boomers have a lot of excess, a lot of cash still, despite the fact that over the last 5 or 7 years, we've wiped out a lot of household wealth. Looking at household net worth in housing, home equity that used to exist, we've lost $6.2 trillion, which is about 48% of what we had at the beginning. And household, if you look at all household assets, they're down about $12 trillion over the period. Now, a lot of that's come back due to the stock market, but the money that is in the hand of the grandparents who have been passing some of this money on have produced a pretty good flow of buyers. I mean, there are some people out there, despite the fact that we despair what's happening to many,
mm-hmm.
There are others who are doing pretty well coming into the housing market.
Let's take a couple of calls. Kayla is calling from Cambridge. Hi, Kayla. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you guys?
Very well. What's on your mind?
Well, I was just listening to your conversation, and it really struck a chord with me, having just finished a nurse practitioner program and doing my exit loan counseling and finding out, you know, that I owe over $150,000 in loans. So buying a house really isn't even kind of a glimmer in my mind when I'm thinking about paying off these loans over the course of 20 years.
So, Kayla, for now, you're thinking about renting for the near future?
I am thinking about renting, but I also know that that's kind of money down the drain. Luckily, my parents live close by, so that might be my next option.
Well, Kayla, we wish you all the luck in the world, and thanks for calling in. We appreciate it. Let's take another call. Aria from Nashua, New Hampshire is calling. Aria, am I pronouncing that correctly?
It's Aria, but it's
Aria.
Close enough, actually.
Aria. Okay, well, glad you could join us. What's on your mind?
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on. Same thing as Kayla, really. I mean, I listen to you guys a lot, and I really had the urge to call in. I'm 27 years old. I just finished my master's last year at Northeastern University in Boston, and the job market has been absolutely horrible. And, you know, I didn't come out with $150,000 worth of loans, thankfully, but it's still extremely difficult. And I'm currently living with my parents as well. We have a family business that I kind of fell into. And without that, I'm not sure what I'd be doing right now. So it's completely out of the question. Even renting would be really difficult right now.
Well, Aria, thanks for the call, and we wish you as well all the luck in the world. Michael Goodman, what do you hear? Two calls there that pretty much illustrate a couple of the challenges that I guess a lot of people are dealing with.
Right. I mean, in a world where you're not necessarily secure in your income or you haven't established yourself in your career, it's a very daunting challenge if you don't have assistance from mom and dad or grandma. Certainly, there are people who are able to access those opportunities, but many, many more, it seems, that can't. Part of the challenge here is that even when people are looking for rental options in eastern Massachusetts, the rents have been rising, suggesting that maybe, as Professor Case was suggesting, that home purchasing for some is a better deal than might be apparent. But we really do have severe restrictions on new housing development in Massachusetts. And so if some developer in the much embattled construction industry wanted to build multifamily rental units in Greater Boston, they would be very hard-pressed to get local communities to approve those developments. And so we do make this problem worse by over-regulating the use of our land and making it difficult for the market to respond, because I do think if we had more affordable rental options, it might make it easier, at least for some folks, to move out, start their own households, and then as they get their legs under them economically, as their careers progress, re-enter the home purchasing market.
Well, related to that, Carl Case, how has the housing stock changed over the past few years? That is, owner-occupied homes versus rental units.
Well, it's been a dramatic change. I'm looking at the statistics on number of households. And several things are apparent when you look at it. First of all, that households have been growing more slowly than they have in the past over the last 5 to 10 years. We used to get 1.7 million housing new households each year to house, and that kept housing production up at a high level. Housing production is now at a 60-year low level, and it's been there for about 40 months. It's been a disaster for the building sector. Households actually declined, the number of households, for the first time that I could ever find it in the data, in 2010 and early 2011. Since then, there seems to be something of a turnaround. So the number of households being formed is growing. Now, if you look at owner or renter, it's different. If you go back 7 years, we've added an average of about 1 million new units a year.
Mm-hmm.
Of those new units, 6 million out of the 7 are rental house.
Wow.
Rental households.
6 million out of 7 million.
Just counting the
mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there's been a clear shift in favor of ownership, not just with people not being able to buy homes, but people moving out of owner-occupied into rental-occupied because they have to, they've been evicted, or they're just changing their choice. So there's big numbers change in the rental. Some of it looks to be positive in the sense that we're actually growing households. If you look at February and March,
mm-hmm.
Households are up about 200,000 in those 2 months.
And Michael Goodman, let me ask you this. When it comes to the recovery of the housing market, how important is this particular population? If they're sitting on the sidelines, what does that do to the recovery of the market, either in the near term or the long term?
Well, I mean, it certainly reduces the number of interested buyers, and I guess in that respect reduces the demand for housing, and to the extent that that plays itself out, you definitely have headwinds that the housing market needs to struggle against. The other data that I think the similar data that the one that Professor Case is looking at that's been striking to me is it does appear that inventories have been declining lately, suggesting that people who have homes to sell as the market stabilizes may be choosing not to keep them on the market. And so while buyers are waiting for a better deal to come along, some of the more optimistic news of late may be leading people to make different choices about when they want to sell their home. And so there are pockets in Massachusetts where there have been reports of, you know, multiple offers or people looking for housing where they can't find it. And you have this strange situation where buyers are waiting for the prices to drop and sellers are waiting for the prices to rise. And so when you have less of a supply of housing on the market at any given time, and then certain segments of the population who are either choosing not to participate or being shut out in some cases, that certainly makes a housing recovery much more challenging. Mm.
Well, let me introduce someone from the front lines of this story, so to speak. Joan Taranto is a real estate agent in the Boston area with Gibson Sotheby's International Realty. She's 29 years old. She's a relatively new homeowner herself and works with young first-time homeowners. And Joan, good to have you. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So let me ask you, you've been listening to this conversation. Describe some of the challenges you're seeing that face young homeowners, would-be homeowners, looking to finance a home here in Massachusetts.
Well, Kayla and Aria touched on two of the most predominant issues that are facing young buyers today, one being the mounting student loan debt. It's, you know, an issue that we know is gonna have to be dealt with at some point. The government is considering raising the rates on student loans, which will certainly impact that population again. Aria hit the second point where he was talking about job security. I mean, in any economic downturn, you see that, you know, people who have higher education are taking lower, you know, positions on the corporate ladder just so that they have employment and something stable to go with. So a lot of these young, you know, students are coming out of these wonderful universities in downtown Boston. They may or may not have student loan debt, but on top of that, they're entering a job market that is so difficult that even when they do have a job, they really don't feel secure about it, that they can make a long-term investment like buying real estate.
That's Joanne Taranto. She's a real estate agent in Boston. And Joanne, let me ask you this. What avenues are available to folks for securing a loan? Because we're hearing that the credit market is terrible, that it's a difficult thing. I mean, what do you advise folks?
Well, what I would like people to know is that, you know, with all that's out there in the media, you know, everybody is an individual, and your own situation and what you're making for an income and what you have for debts and existing obligations, you need to have your own profile looked at by a loan professional. And using a recommendation from a local realtor is the best way to go about that. And why you want to do that is you want to start with education. That's the first part to buying a home, is you need to understand the process. Mm-hmm. And getting a loan really is something that's available. A mortgage is available for people who qualify for them. And that's the bottom line. So if you feel like you have the funds that you could do a down payment, the next step is to make a phone call, set up a meeting, and get yourself educated on the process of how pre-approval works and how loan underwriting works and how to get into the market to begin looking for real estate.
Sure, because information obviously is power. Carl Case, there are other options available to folks. What are they?
Well, one of them is the FHA. You can get mortgage insurance if you qualify, and the ability to qualify for those type programs is really there. The problem with both the FHA as an option and the fact that these tax subsidies are so great is that they're likely to go away. Mm. The Congress recognizes that about 80% of the loans written today get sold in the secondary market. And if they're sold to Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, or the FHA, they get insurance from the federal government automatically. And that that Congress is likely to stop that. And if it does, it's going to raise interest rates to a large segment of the population substantially. And the other thing is that the tax benefits, we're going to be going through in the next 2 years a huge debate about tax reform.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be impossible for Congress to leave the subsidies to housing, which are so huge, on the table. They're going to be part of the bargaining. And when that's going to get the realtors and the home builders worked up. But it's a fact. It's going to be out there. And that's going to raise the – it's another headwind.
Michael Goodman, do you see the future sort of legislative issues that Carl Case was referring to there as further challenging this situation down the road?
I do. I think the looming fiscal cliff that we're facing here in the United States is a huge issue, not just for the reasons that he mentioned, which I would totally agree with, but also because it injects uncertainty into the many segments of the economy. So many folks who depend on the federal government for resources, including not just dependent folks, but defense contractors, research universities, teaching hospitals, and all the people that they employ and the service providers that provide them are awaiting the Congress to make a decision about what the budget's going to look like. Will these sequestered cuts that the super committee was supposed to spare us from actually take effect or not? And that's having an impact on people's decision making and on the decision making of firms. And frankly, along with Europe and other sort of uncertainties that are out there in the environment, conspiring to, I think, lead a lot of people to sit on the sidelines and say, I'm going to wait and see what happens. I want to make sure my job is going to be there. I want to make sure that a lot of these tax and other advantages that are offered by certain kinds of housing choices are going to be there before I bet my future on it.
Let me ask both of you, Michael Goodman and Carl Case, this question. We have a tweet from someone named Justin. A house ties you down and prevents you from leaving the city for a job elsewhere. And this raises an issue that came up in our morning editorial meeting, and that is for people who are young and on the move and want to be a part of that sort of dynamic creative class. I mean, is there an argument to be made to don't buy a house? It's better to remain independent in this economy and be able to move quickly, to be nimble and on the move and mobile. What do you think, Carl?
Absolutely. I mean, it's the job market is we don't just take a job and live in and stay with it.
Sure.
Like we used to do in the past. I mean, people move. They want their independence. They want their freedom. And there are more single person households out there. The number of single person households has doubled in the last 15, 20 years. So that's a huge factor. And the job market is not nice to people. If a firm's got to lay off, it lays off quickly, and people want the ability to respond by moving to where the jobs are. And it's true that ownership slows you down.
And Michael Goodman, I don't want to in any way be insensitive to folks out there who are having a challenge with this, but is there any part of this that is good? In other words, during the boom years, lots of people became homeowners, perhaps for the wrong reasons, perhaps before they could afford it. Maybe the fact that folks are feeling more cautious about buying now, is there some good in that?
I think so. I mean, I think a more reality-based assessment of these housing options makes a lot of sense. And I guess we are solving one problem, albeit the hard way, and that is the housing affordability problem that reached profound levels here in Massachusetts, particularly in eastern Massachusetts and other parts of the country where the housing bubble actually in many cases was worse, but where there were all kinds of economic opportunities, growing incomes, and the rise in home equity allowed people to bid the prices up. And so that shut a lot of people out. And so as these prices drop, if things settle and if employment returns to normal levels, then we should at least be starting in a more affordable place when people start to reenter the housing market in force. So I guess that's a silver lining. Again, I think we could have solved the home affordability problem with a lot less pain, but I guess we'll take that silver lining.
Well, let's take a couple more calls. I think we've got time to squeeze at least one or two in. Calvin is calling from Brighton. Hi, Calvin. You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing?
Very well.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Yeah, I just wanted to mention real quick and also piggybacking off of a comment recently made here about FHA and VA loans. If there's concern at the federal level, there's also great state programs in Mass.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a first-time home buyer. I'm closing in about 2 weeks. And programs like Mass Housing and Soft Seconds, you only need to put 3 to 5% down.
3 to 5% down. So you're a first-time home buyer. Can I ask you how old you are, Calvin?
Sure, 26.
All right, good. Well, congratulations to you.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, and the only other comment is, you know, the real estate market for renting is always pretty resilient in Boston, you know, obviously due to the high density of colleges and universities. But, you know, due to these kind of incentive programs, buying can still have, you know, great advantages, right? It's more economically feasible than renting in some areas of Boston right now, at least in my opinion, and also you get to build equity, right?
Calvin, thanks so much for the call. I appreciate it. Carl Case, I wonder if you could expand a little bit on those two programs that he mentioned in Massachusetts that help folks?
Well, I don't know them in any great detail, but there are a lot of options out there. Mm-hmm. There's a Massachusetts housing agency that is very active, and you just have to poke around and you'll find them. There are programs out there that will help people who are having a hard time qualifying for a mortgage.
And Michael Goodman, sort of final word from you. For folks who are out there who want to be in the situation that Calvin is, that is making their down payment on a first home, closing on their first home, what's your final word of advice?
I think it would be think broadly about where you want to live and the kind of amenities that are important to you. I mean, the dream locations in Greater Boston are out of reach for the vast majority of us, and I think there are communities where there are more affordable housing options, even ownership options that are frankly targeted by many of the programs that the last caller referred to. We call them cities, including the city of Boston. And mm-hmm. I think to the extent that the next generation can take the plunge and help turn some of our urban communities that have really been disinvested in over the generations into comeback communities by making that investment, they can take advantage of a market opportunity and make these communities stronger places. That's a tall order, but I think it's something people should consider.
Carl Case.
Well, I think there's some reasons for optimism out there, and this housing plunge has really done, as Michael suggests, done a lot for affordability. But it's going to take a long time to sort out. It's a tale of 1,000 cities, not two. And you look in those submarkets around the country, some are clearing, doing fine, where people want to live. People do have income and wealth in some places if they lived through the boom and didn't extract it on the way down. But so it's a complicated point. I think we're basically at a bottom, but it's a complex bottom.
Complex bottom. We'll leave it there for now. Carl Case, retired Wellesley College economist and co-founder of the Case-Shiller Index. Thanks so much for coming in. We appreciate it. And Professor Michael Goodman, associate professor and chair of the Department of Public Policy at UMass Dartmouth. Michael Goodman, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
And listeners, thanks for your calls. The conversation continues on Radio Boston, where SD writes, there's no way we could afford a home in Boston. The little savings we have, we feel we need to hold on to in case a layoff happens again. That comment speaking for a lot of people out there. Stay with us. Coming up, Only a Game's Bill Littlefield joins us to talk sports, and we preview a play about communication told in four languages, including American Sign Language. We'll meet the deaf actress from Love Person. Stay with us. I'm Anthony Brooks with Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.